Live and Lansing, Jack Ebling is on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back, Jack Ebling, Scott Eckersley, Ebling and you, 1320 WILS for Wednesday, September 15th. Very happy to welcome in our next guest, and he is Kyle Malin, the editor of the MERS newsletter and columnist for City Pulse. Hello, Kyle.
Hey, how you doing, Jack?
Just fine. Well, we have been through all kinds of machinations about debates here and town hall meetings, and would you guess we would have zero, one, two, or three debates between now and the election?
Well, I hope I'm wrong, but I wouldn't be surprised if we have zero.
Yeah.
And I really think it's too bad. And, it, you know, I guess maybe it's just the journalist in me, but I really think that the public needs to be educated about the different candidates, good, bad, or indifferent. I mean, we need to have an education process, and part of that is debates. I mean, you can only learn so much about people in television commercials.
Right.
Now, I know that we have mass media now, and I know that we also have the Internet. You can check out things on the website, but, I mean, in our busy lives, we don't have time to go through all that most of the time, and if we have a dedicated television program, right, like a debate, where we can learn about the candidates, how they interact, I just think it's so important in our democratic process, and
right,
I don't like the idea of setting a new precedent where political candidates dictate when, how, and to what degree we have debates. I don't think that's healthy for the process. We're the ones who are electing people. It's not the candidate's campaign. It's our campaign. We elect the person, not the other way around.
On a federal level, in presidential elections, there is a debate commission which handles a lot of this. Would you like to see something like this on a state level?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely what we need here. I mean, we've been talking about these debates now for, what, 6 weeks?
Yeah.
It's completely unnecessary. Completely
right.
Unnecessary. A waste of time. I mean, if we could be talking about some real issues about what the candidates want to do with property values or Proposal A, about our tax structure, I think it may not grab the headlines that this thing has been grabbing, but at least it would be a bit more substantive than arguing about whether they're going to appear in public or not. That's just goofy.
Well, I told someone the big myth of this was that we have not had debates. We have. Unfortunately, they've been about whether we should have debates.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, you really can't call this thing in Westland on Monday a debate. I mean, really,
no.
This was Rick Snyder's town hall. He invited Virge Bonaro in. And they did have a little exchange, and they answered the same questions, and they were side by side. But, you know, this wasn't televised to the public at large, unless you want to watch the YouTube video from a guy who was standing, 30 feet away. I mean, yeah, I guess you can do that. It's just, that's not practical. I mean, we have set a standard in this country about what we expect from political candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And we expect to have, for our governor, a debate. I mean, this isn't like 1998. Where John Engler told Jeffrey Figer to take a hike. I mean, John Engler was our governor for 8 years. We already knew
right.
what he was all about, and we knew that Jeffrey Figer was a joker. And, you know, but we don't know anything about Rick Snyder. I mean,
right.
the public doesn't know anything about Rick Snyder. They don't know Virge Bonaro from Adam.
Right. The other thing I think is you're absolutely right, and Kyle, I think it's interesting, not just what someone's 10-point or 50-point plan is, their vision, and what they can put out on a television commercial, but I want to see them interact.
Exactly. No, I think that's absolutely great. And you know what? They interacted just fine in Westland. They were very courteous toward each other. They had a great rapport. I don't know what their history was in meeting each other in the past. That may have been the first time they actually met each other, but I thought they interacted very well. I think Virge was on his best behavior. Obviously, Rick Snyder played it exactly right by inviting him in and having him sit through the town hall and giving him equal time and whatnot. But let's see that out on the big screen. Let people see that out there. And, you know, if Virge wants to get nasty or Rick Snyder wants to get nasty, let them. And you know, it's up to the voters to decide if that's something that they want. I think what happens here is that we've gotten to be where everyone's a political pundit. Everyone's a political, like, mastermind. And what
right.
should be the best way that we should go about things. And whether we should have actual debates or not should not be a point of political strategery. You know, what you want to do in the debates, you know, whatever, that's fine. But
right.
to actually have the debate, for crying out loud, I mean, how can you say, well, make this a political point that if we're up 20 points in the polls and if we don't have debates, maybe that will knock us down 5-10 points, but we're still ahead.
It's the prevent defense in football.
Well, it's not only prevent defense, it's cynical. I mean, you're taking something that should be expected and turning it into a political point on a political planet. I think that there's a certain amount of cynicism there.
Kyle Malin, the editor of the MERS really. Newsletter, columnist for City Pulse, our guest on Ebling and You. Kyle, I want you to help me make some sense out of this business tax increase proposal. And Rick Snyder, a lot of people don't seem to like the Michigan business tax. And Rick has said he wants to replace that with a 6% across the board corporate income tax. Mm-hmm. Virge Bernardo Blassett said that's going to cost businesses a lot of money. And apparently Mike Bishop, of all people, acknowledges that Snyder's plan is going to raise taxes on thousands of small businesses.
Well, you know, that's kind of the problem with these business taxes. And we had this debate back when we created the business tax back in 2007. You know, it's just squeezing the balloon. I mean, you squeeze it one way and somebody pays more and somebody pays less. You squeeze it another way, somebody pays more, somebody pays less. I think what the point about Rick Snyder's business tax proposal is making it simple and not having to hire a team of accountants to find out all these different little tax loopholes and junkets and intricacies. I mean, really, the Michigan business tax is very similar to the single business tax in that it's a mismatch. I mean, it's a combination of a lot of different things, and it's not very easy for the regular person to figure it out. And so that's where I think this 6% across-the-board corporate tax actually has some merit in that, you know, let's make it simple. Why does it have to be everybody's got to get a little win on this thing? The Michigan business tax was seen as a win when it was passed by the legislature because the Senate got a little bit, the House got a little bit, the governor got a little bit, and the businesses got, you know, shafted because now they have to figure out something that was equally as complex as it was before it. I think the simplicity of the Snyder plan actually has a little bit of merit and probably should be discussed more.
Mm-hmm. Well, while we're talking about taxes, and I know this is more of a federal issue right now, but the Bush tax cuts expiring, and a lot has been made about whether those would be kept in place for everyone or whether they just would be for all but the top 2%. And I guess now they're being renamed the Obama middle class tax cuts by some people. I guess it depends on how you define it and how you spin it.
Yeah, it is. You know, when you're talking about somebody's tax cuts or tax increases, you got to kind of look at it in a broader perspective. You know, what happens if we don't have these tax cuts or these tax increases? What's going to happen to the federal deficit?
Right.
You know, under the Obama administration, we've just seen our national debt just completely explode to levels that I don't think anybody really dreamed of when he was elected president. I remember during this campaign, we had the national comptroller in town, and he had a sit-down with us here at MERS, and he laid out the scenario that if the national debt is not taken care of by the year, I can't remember what it was, 2050 or something like that, that our economy or the state government would just completely go broke. It would collapse because it couldn't handle itself. This is not some schmo off the street. This was the U.S. government comptroller telling us this. And so he said, we have to hold these presidential candidates to fire. What are they going to do about the deficit? And so then we elected a president who not only decided not to do anything with the deficit, but completely blow it out of whack with these stimulus plans. And now we're talking about more
also a war in Afghanistan.
Among many other costs.
Yeah.
So now we're talking about these tax cuts. You know, at a certain point, we have to get spending in line. And I know we don't want to hear about people paying more. And, you know, I don't like paying more taxes either. And we're talking about cutting spending. But you know what? Really, we got to start having a real discussion about what we're going to do about paying off our national debt, because we can't be loaning money from Japan and China forever.
Right.
And that's exactly what's happening right now.
Yeah, and I think it puts China in a very unusual position here, relates to the United States and a lot of issues that are going to come up over the next few years.
There's too many issues that are just talked about me right now. What do I got to pay right now as opposed to looking down the line and what those decisions are going to mean? Things have got to be looked at in a more broader perspective.
One more quick question, Kyle. Last night, primary elections all over the country, and it seemed that the more conservative Republican candidates won. A lot of Tea Party backed candidates did well. A lot of people saying that really that's a victory for the Democrats in some ways.
Yeah, I suppose. I know that in Delaware they're seeing that as a victory to see somebody that could be viewed as a bit of a whack job winning over there so that the Democrats have a better handle on things. I got to tell you what, I'm doing a story today at MERS about how John Dingell may be in trouble. John Dingell, okay, the dean of the U.S. House of Representatives.
He finally gets health care, and now he's in trouble?
He represents a district, Jack, that has a 65% Democratic base. Why are we talking about John Dingell being in trouble? I mean, that's just absurd. My point being is that all over the country, all over the state, we're seeing Republicans doing well. We're seeing anti-establishment people doing well. I think that's really the takeaway here. People are not happy with what they're seeing.
Yeah.
At the federal, the state level, they want to hold incumbents accountable, and they want the longtime people gone.
Well, Barack Obama ran on a platform of change and didn't realize they were going to keep changing it 2 years later. Our guest, Kyle Malin, the editor of MERS Newsletter. Kyle, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Jack.
We'll be right back with Senator Debbie Stabenow coming up next on Ebling & You.